Welcome to the Sons of Mjolnir podcast.
The Sons of... what?
This isn't your Sons of Macaroni, yeah!
The Sons of Mjolnir?
This is Sons of Mjolnir,
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Sons of Mjolnir. As always, I am one of your hosts, Fat Thor, and today I am joined by a very, very special guest. You may know him from such shows as The Middle, Abbott Elementary, Funny or Die's Take It Outside, also Princess Leia on Jimmy Kimmel a couple times. But you probably most notably know him for being one of the hosts of New Rock Stars, The Break Room, the most recent Guardians of the Galaxy, and also Have a Drink with Me. I am joined by the wonderful Tommy Bechtel. Thank you so much for being here. I cannot be more excited to have you on here, my friend.
I got to say, that is the best podcast intro I've ever had. So,
thank you so much. Well, you're a man of many hats. You got a lot of stuff going on, man.
I got a big head, you know? I can't... You,
hey,
I got
Big Head Gang is in the building, man. That's We're in the building.
I got to wear a lot of hats to cover my giant head. So,
well, I'm right there with you, man. That's exactly why I don't wear hats, because of this big ass cranium.
Yeah.
But before we talk about all the, like I said, you're a man of many hats and you do a lot of different stuff. But before we get into some of that stuff, I want to quickly go over what we usually do here on the show is kind of a comic book origin story sort of thing. And you obviously talk a lot about nerd stuff online, both, like I just mentioned, on New Rock Stars, Break Room, Guardian of the Galaxy. And I know your true love is Star Wars. So I'm curious, not only with your comic origin, but what's kind of like the Star Wars, like how did you get into all this kind of geek stuff, that kind of origin? I know that you've said that you actually have the first copy of What If that I thought was a really great find. So I know that you're into comics a little bit. So like I said, what's that kind of origin story?
Well, my love for Star Wars started when I was very, very young. I have my mom, both my mom and dad are one of seven children. So I have, and everybody has kids. So I have like 50 cousins, and I have a lot of cousins my same age or a couple years older. And on my mom's side, her sister Monica, I just was very, very close with my Aunt Monica all the way up until she passed away a few years ago from cancer. But we were our entire life. I spent most of my weekends at my Aunt Monica's house because she had three sons, Nick, Nate and Zach. Nick, Nate and Zach were all a couple years older than me. So obviously I got hand-me-down everything from them. And one of the hand-me-down things I got from them were their broken Star Wars toys. So I got like kind of three-quarter intact stormtroopers, a Chewie missing an arm, you know, kind of well-played with, well-loved Star Wars toys. And my Aunt Monica showed me Star Wars. She showed me the movie. I'd go over there. I'd watch movies. We'd get Kentucky Fried Chicken. It was a fat boy's dream. It was. It was
beautiful.
So I, you know, Star Wars was the jumping off point. By the time I was born, the year Return of the Jedi came out. I was born in 1983. So I probably saw Star Wars for the first time in like 1989 or something like that. So it was well out on VHS by that point, but not yet special edition. So it was the pure for the people that demand their stuff. I'm fine. I say, George, tinker with your baby as much as you want. You want to keep improving your car, put new spoilers on it. That's fine. But that kind of got me obsessed with Star Wars. I thought the toys were awesome. Then I got old enough to ask for toys myself. And, you know, it was funny. My mom and dad were like really strict. They did not let me have G.I. Joes because G.I. Joes had guns. But somehow blasters and lightsabers did not qualify as guns. So
say it's not actual bullets. So
that's right. That's right. So, long-winded tale there, but I think important. The Pike boys, Monica Pike, my aunt, and Zach, Nate, Nick, and my uncle Greg, they kind of formed my nerd brain at a very early age. And, you know, both my parents were like not super nerdy, but they love film and television. Both my parents are like fans of like all genres. They're not hyper focused on anything. My mom loves Star Trek, so she got me into Star Trek at a young age. But that was really it. So I would say all credit to the Pikes.
Shout out the Pikes, and I'm glad that they did. Yeah, shout out the Pikes, and I'm glad that they did, because, like I said, now you're doing all this great stuff, and I'm sure that even just that early exposure to just the world of Star Wars, but like the storytelling of it, definitely influenced you with you know going into comedy and then doing all this other stuff.
I think, you know, it's something not a lot of kids, I think, make it to actually hear the line "Luke, I am your father," and not know.
Yeah, very true.
So to have the unspoiled reveal that Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father is a truly, truly incredible experience. And I hope someday, if I have children, I can keep them in the dark about it until they watch. So,
oh yeah, anyway. I'm sheltering them for sure. So that's not a reveal for them. I was born in 95. So I think I'm like one of the last generations that, like, probably, like you said, it wasn't spoiled for me. Cause like, there wasn't internet and all that.
Yeah.
That's like one of like the quintessential moments in a young nerd's life.
Oh,
like,
my finding God. That out. Absolutely. It's like, I feel like we all go through the Luke's emotions.
Yeah.
Because we're like, no, not this guy.
Like, what?
I've just spent like 2.5 hours of movie through a film and a half of like hating this guy.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, wait, what? Where is this all leading to? Then, you know, your little kid brain formulates like, oh my God, is he going to make Luke bad, or is Luke going to make him good? What's going to happen here?
Yep.
And that's by design.
Yep, that's how it gets you. That's how you get the bug. And like, I feel like I was so young that like, I didn't even really grab the gravity of it until like later. And then I rewatch it. I'm like, wait a minute. What? Yeah. Like, holy shit.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, I love it. Love it.
But so I want to talk about, too, speaking of comedy and all this. So you're the first comedian and or actor that we've ever had on the show. So I got to pick your brain a little bit about that aspect of, you know, your career and all that. And so you've talked about, so you said when you were younger that you were kind of very shy and, you know, it was kind of something in the back of your mind, but you never really kind of got yourself there to do it, which is something that I very, very much relate to. Mm-hmm. And then you answered a Craigslist ad, you started doing sketch comedy, and like the bug bit you. So I'm curious, when the bug bit you, you've talked about some of your influences being Will Ferrell, Conan O'Brien, and specifically about them, the fact how they can, how you say, like, just turn it on at any moment, like they're always on.
Yeah.
So when you started out and you kind of caught this bug, I'm curious, what was the process like trying to acquire that? Because I think that you do a really great job with that, just, you know, on New Rock Stars and all that. You're very quick off the cuff. And obviously, that's a very important skill to have with improv. So like I said, what was the process of like starting to develop that?
Yeah, that's great. Great question. I think, you know, it was interesting, because I think, to go back to the beginning, the shyness that I had was like a shyness out of uncomfortable discomfort. So when I knew people, that's when I would be funny. Like when I was comfortable around family, I mean, for my family to hear me describe myself as shy, they'd just roll their eyes. But but my parents know, because they would go to parent teacher conferences and the teachers would be like, Tom doesn't really talk, or he's like, you know, he's very shy. And I think with that, it taught me to listen. And I, you know, I wanted to know. I was always so afraid I was so anxious about how people felt about me, which is not necessarily healthy, but every kid goes through it. So I would listen and listen and think of ways to like ingratiate myself to people, or you know, have them be like, oh, like he's funny. And I think that translates as an adult in improv, active listening. It's just the key to everything. It's not necessarily that I have some like giant index of funny things to say. It's just that I'm interested in what people say, and I listen to what they say. And rather than something that I had maybe in my younger years, which would be wait for my turn to be funny rather than listen to people, I'm processing what they say and seeing if there's something I can add to it. It's the tenet of yes and in improv, not yes, not agreement or nodding your head and then new subject. It's agreement and building off of. So one of the things I think that Conan O'Brien does, which is why he's always been a hero of mine, is like he can sit in silence and let the other person talk for, you know, 2 minutes without him being feeling like, oh, I'm not, I haven't gotten my share of the oxygen in the room. And then he'll respond to what they said with something so brilliant and so funny. And that's just something that I aspire to do. You know, when you're a big guy, people want you to be Farley, or they want you to be Belushi. And I get that. And trust me, Chris Farley is not necessarily like a comedy hero of mine, but he's someone on a pedestal. I have on a pedestal in terms of how funny they are. You know, the way he's not someone that I want to be like, lifestyle wise, clearly, as a performer, I don't want to be an out of control man child that people are like, oh, it's funny because he's throwing himself around. However, have I spent 1,000 hours of my life laughing so hard it hurts at that? Yes. And same with Belushi. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, I think part of, you know, some stubbornness that I have is that I will try hard to make it more about, yes, certainly I can have manic energy, but I want what I'm saying to be funny, not just funny because of how I'm saying it. I guess, I don't know if that makes
sense. No, 100%. Like, yeah. I mean, and that just goes to, you know, the maniacal riz that you got, like you said. But in all seriousness though, I think that's 100% a great point. And like you said, no disrespect to Farley. I'm a big guy. I'm from Chicago. I love Farley. But like you said, I think there's something important to say about what's being said being actually funny, as opposed to just the way you're saying it being funny, which there's room for both.
And but... I think he even more, so, I mean, I think Belushi was all energy, right? Like, Belushi's like, you know, the way he's chopping a sub sandwich with a samurai sword, or Blues Brothers, he's dancing around and like flailing around and like, you know, any of his other, Bluto from Animal House. I think Farley actually did say very, very funny things with, you know, even just the face, even like the way he would end a sentence and look at you and be like, whatever, you know, like, how could you not laugh at that? I guess I just, you know, it's like almost a point of belligerency for me. It's like, because I had a belly in high school, people were like, you're Chris Farley. And I'm like,
I got the same thing. Yep. Seth Rogen, Chris Farley, 100%.
Absolutely. So, you know, and again, I mean, listen, people have called, when I shave, people call me John Candy because I have red cheeks and I have a big face. And I guess some people think I sound like him too. So that's like, you know, a high praise. I love John Candy. I would say, if anything, that is what I'm going for. Mm-hmm. John Candy's performances and, you know, what he was able to do comedically and what he was able to do in dramatic moments of the comedies that he did. Like, those, I think that's more the North Star that I'm shooting for. I realize I've talked a circle around the original question.
You're good.
I love talking about the process of this stuff. Is so interesting to me because, you know, I love improv and I love, you know, doing those live stream shows like The Break Room or Palaxies, you know, live to tape. You know, we tape it live, and then our wonderful editor Alexa, she then makes a masterful final product. But
shout out Alexa.
Yes, she's the best. I gotta say, best in the biz. But I think it's all about listening and connecting. And I can tell when I'm with Whitney or when I'm with MT or any of the people that I'm, Brandon and Zach. You know, Brandon, Zach, and Eric and I all did improv for years before we did anything. I mean, Eric and those two were working at New Rockstars long before I was there. But we knew each other. I mean, Zach and Brandon are two of my oldest friends in L.A. I met them the first year that I lived here. These are all New Rockstars people for anyone listening. Just so I know I'm kind of just saying names of people. That
you're good.
But, you know, I can tell by the looks on their faces, in good times and bad. I can tell when I'm just steamrolling and taking all the oxygen. It's no better barometers than those guys. But I can also tell, especially with Whitney, I can tell when we're connecting, even through like this, even through a Zoom or Riverside or Zencaster or whatever. I can tell by the look on a person's face, like, okay, they feel like they're being heard by me and we're on a roll right now. And that there's just, that's the drug for me. That is my drug of choice, is like getting on a roll with somebody comedically. And there's just no better feeling. It's, I mean, that's a feeling I'll chase through live performance and live stream. I hope I get to do it as long as I live. I never want to stop that.
Yeah, just like that creative energy that kind of exists in the room. I totally understand what you're saying. And especially with you and Whitney, I mean, that's why you guys got the best friend necklaces.
Yes, absolutely.
There's just, you know, there's certain people, though, that you have that just kind of creative energy with. Yeah. And like you can almost predict where they're going to go, what they're going to say. And I think that's super important to have in a creative relationship, no matter what you're doing. But you touched on this perfectly. This was something I was actually going to bring up with the John Candy reference. You said how you admire how there's layers to his performance. And that it's like we were just talking about. It's not just the way he's saying funny things. It's the layers and how he's saying it. And I just really love that kind of outlook on comedy. And I think especially in the day and age that we're in right now, where it's like, oh, you can't tell jokes anymore. Like, I just think that's a very refreshing kind of outlook on how to look at telling jokes and all that. And I mean, I want to get into New Rockstar stuff, and you led into it perfectly, but I do want to ask you, you just said you love talking about this stuff and I love hearing about it. So I want to ask you just again, really quickly. So with the improv, you also do stand up as well, right? Didn't you just do a stand up show?
I did. Yeah. I did a stand up show. I mean, I used to do stand up three nights a week, you know, kind of when I was starting out. Now I think it's a little more presentational for me. I like to do stand up to like practice for something.
Yeah.
If I'm going to host an event, or if I'm going to present an award or something like that, I like to do some stand-up gigs to kind of warm up.
Shake the cobwebs off.
Yeah, get used to being alone on stage. Because the wonderful thing about improv or sketch is that you're never really alone on stage. And the horrifying and either gratifying or soul-sucking experience of stand-up is you are alone on stage. So live or die, man, as Ralph Macchio says in Karate.
Well, that... I want to ask the question on top of that I'm interested in is, so we've had a decent amount of comic book writers on here and, you know, talk about their writing process and whatnot.
Sure.
So with like a stand-up routine, and even not even maybe a whole routine, but even just like a bit, what does the writing process for something like that look like as opposed to improv, which obviously it says it in the name is, you know, improvisation.
Yes. I would say for me, it's a process of self-sabotage and learning not to burn myself on the same pan three times. I will learn a lot about what is funny through conversation. You know, I'll have a conversation with a friend where I'm not necessarily trying to be funny, but I'm sharing an idea or a thought, and they'll laugh, and it'll be a genuine laugh. And I'll, you know, or like the idea or the point of view that I have has caught them by surprise. Mm-hmm. Now, what I should do in that moment as a comedian is write that what I said down verbatim, or as close to verbatim as possible. What I do, because I was raised by two guilt-ridden Irish Catholic parents, is I do not want to interrupt the conversation. So I continue the entire conversation. And then 2 hours later, something in my head goes, ding. Oh, remember that funny thing that you had an idea that could be a stand-up joke? And then I end up with my phone, if you're listening, I'm pulling my phone out because I'm going to prove this in real time. I end up putting something in my notes app that may or may not be what I had originally said. So, for instance, let's see what I have here. Okay, well, one, I just have the word powerbomb. What does powerbomb mean? That was probably that was probably someone. Oh, and then I had a thought the other day of like, how the phrase never judge someone on their worst day is bullshit. There are plenty of people whose worst day defines them. Like, I don't think like a Hitler's worst day is probably a good, you know, whatever. I mean, like anyway, these ideas were at one point pretty fleshed out. And now
now it's like the remnants of the fleshed out idea.
I've got MODOK big head. What does that mean? What was that head?
That could be a million different things.
Yeah. Oh, school assembly puppet shows are condescending. I don't know. Like, this is what I'm saying.
There's gold in there, man. Yeah. There's gold.
Well, you know, they'd always make you like coax the puppet out of hiding. They'd be like, we have a friend here, but he's a little shy. Can you guys say hello? Hello, Charlie? And I'm like, Charlie's a fucking puppet.
Yeah.
He does not need to.
He's a performer, shouldn't he be used to this shit?
Yeah, I mean, he's on the poster. He should know to get out. Anyway, I digress. But I think, you know, As you can see, these ideas are like halfway funny or 25%. And I wish I was better about doing it. But sometimes I am. And those are what usually end up making it into a stand-up set, or at least getting workshop. And the people I know that I really admire as stand-ups, whether or not they're similar comedic sensibility to me, or they're totally different, but I find hilarious, they're always writing. It's just everything is written down, notebooks and notebooks and notebooks full of jokes. And I will say, this is maybe romanticized view of it, a lot of the best joke writers I know are pen and paper. They don't even wait for the notes app. They got a booklet on them somewhere, just, and they're writing down,
ready to go.
Yeah, like a reporter, you know, like a reporter always has their little reporter notebook and they're writing down in their shorthand. So yeah, I'd say when I'm at my best and when I'm proudest of my work ethic, it's when I'm writing down the jokes in real time to start to try to figure them out. Then I'll usually just type it out in like a Word document, say it over and over again. One of my biggest, not pet peeves, because I got to say, I'm not really a big pet peeve person. And that's probably something that needs to be worked out in therapy. There's probably like a tumor with a bunch of pet peeves on my
Building and building.
Because I'm pretty much like live. But one thing that I do always roll my eyes at is when my friends who are stand-ups start doing their routines in conversation. You know, like where they'll like, we'll be sitting down at dinner and they're like, well, you know, the other day I got my car towed, and you're like, okay. Yeah. And then it throws a new joke.
Yeah.
Like, oh God, like, are you doing your stand-up routine right now? And so I think I consciously am so afraid of doing that a lot of times I will sabotage a good idea over workshopping it with a group of friends at House of Pies in LA.
What's the deal with this pepper, right?
who came here from the furthest away? It's like, well, we all live in LA. We're meeting at a diner. So anyway, I guess the idea is to you gotta go out. You gotta go to open mics, which suck. Everybody knows open mics are the worst, but a necessary thing. The biggest thing for open mics for me is like, you know, when I played football, I didn't go to the gym to like get better at football. I went to the gym to get stronger so that I could get better at football. Yeah. You go to an open mic, not to necessarily get better at performing for an audience. You get better at talking into a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you perform in front of an audience, like, oh, this guy or girl or whoever stands still. Stillness is a huge thing, I think, when you're delivering. I mean, you gesturing is fine, but in auditioning and in stand up, a lot of swaying and moving around is a big sign of nerves. It's a big indicator to casting directors and people who are just good at reading body language that like you're uncomfortable. And I'm generally an uncomfortable person. So
that would be me. I'm a swayer. I like cannot. It's like the ADD in me, but like I cannot sit still. So like I'm swaying. I'm rocking all the time. So these people would be like, man, this guy is just a nervous wreck.
Well, I do think that a lot of your Sebastian Maniscalcos and people like that, I think the gesturing and the like walking around is a thing they probably learned early on in their careers as something that would keep them from being all bouncy. Yeah,
literally.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And that, like I said, same thing with me too. I'm a big hand talker as well. I think it's just like you said, like, I don't know what to do with these meat puppets. Like what the hell do you do with your hands?
I'm covering 80% of the Zoom screen. Right
now. Yeah. It's like sitting here like this the whole time, like fucking Mr. Burns.
Mr. Burns. Oh my God. But speaking of that, I have to give an exciting update to any new Rockstars fans. Karen Gillan is going to be on Simpsons. I think we're one step closer to my dream and Pom Clemente's dream of getting her on The Simpsons. We have a guardian on there.
Yes.
The door is now open.
It's open. And they did that Marvel like crossover a little while ago, too. Just interviewed her not too long ago, so come on now.
Let's get her involved. Come on, she's ready.
But all that leads us perfectly.
I had to sidetrack because I saw a tweet and I was like, oh my God, it could happen.
Yes, please sidetrack all you want, my friend. We're here for you. But that leads us perfectly, though, into new rock stars. I do want to talk about that very quickly. Obviously, that's where a lot of people know you from. That's where I discovered you from. And you talked about you and Eric and Brandon and Zach all did improv together. So I'm assuming that's how that kind of all got started. But I'm curious. So obviously you kind of started on New Rock Stars. Now you got Guardians of the Galaxy, The Break Room, Have a Drink with Me. So like when all this started, like when Eric and them came to you with the New Rock Star stuff, did you envision yourself being like an online person like that when this all started? Or was it like, oh yeah, I'll come talk about some nerd stuff? Like, how did that all like kind of snowball all together?
You know, it kind of happened. Snowball is a great metaphor for a great symbolism, because Philip Molina, who was ran New Rock Stars for many, many years and is also a good friend of mine, he had contacted me to come in, and I think we were calling it New Rock Stars News at that point. And it was basically a prototype for what would become all the different shows, Big Question, Rogue Theory, and then ultimately The Break Room. And I would, it would be Maud Garrett and myself and Sam Basher and Philip and Eric. And, I came in and would do it. It wasn't anything I thought about as, I liked doing it. But if anyone watched those, it was very, very different. It was like the most extreme Break Room episodes. That was where my energy was. I was at like an 11 for every single thing. And it was almost playing the role of a disruptor in the show. Mm-hmm. So it would be like thoughtful point from Eric, thoughtful point from Maud. I'll say something crazy. They'll yes and, because they're funny improvisers, get back on track. And I got, mixed feedback from both my friends and from the World Wide Web. So I thought, oh, I like this. I like what I'm doing, but I know I haven't quite got the equation to podcasting and live streaming yet. So it took some time with Philip and some kind of really Philip's willingness to be very frank and open and clear with notes with regard for my feelings as my friend, but also to tell me like, hey, you can't be a permanent fixture on this channel if your job is to, like, you can come in and be funny for us probably once a month like that. Mm-hmm. That's probably what our audience has a threshold for. And in my mind, I'm like, he's right. And that's not all that I want to do anyway. I want to be able to share my thoughts and opinions. A lot of it is maybe a little bit of feeling of imposter syndrome, because I didn't read a ton of comics as a kid. I was like a really nerdy. I loved reading like sagas of books that had, a comic. Ironically, now I love reading comics and especially trade paperbacks that go volumes and volumes and volumes, because I love something that takes a long time to get through.
Yeah.
And what's longer than like a 50-year running comic? But I felt some imposter syndrome early on, and Philip kind of really worked with me to channel the voice of like someone who's unpredictable but is also serious about the job. So, I think a lot of the times when we go to conventions and stuff, one of the funny things is people who just know me from The Break Room think I'm like a lunatic. And that's very fair, because the way that I behave on that show is crazy. Mm. But that's not how I really am in real life.
Yeah.
It's not how I am in real life. In real life, I think people would maybe still describe me as crazy, but I'm not like, saying a lot of the things that I say on The Break Room are said not as my actual opinion, but kind of making fun of someone who has that opinion. Not to compare as to Stephen Colbert when he had the Colbert Report, but like as a tribute to that, like I'm often sharing the voice of what I consider the worst of fandom.
Yeah. And like playing it up.
Exactly. So I think I'm giving the long answer, because I think it's important to kind of explain that really Philip is the one who helped me get to a place where I did think I could do this. I could be like an online personality talking about all the stuff that I love and am a fan of and not feel like a phony and feel like I can contribute ideas and not just be maniacally crazy and, you know, just shouting interruptive, disruptive statements to just try and make things funnier. He emboldened me. And then everyone else at New Rockstars, and now even more so with Whitney and MT, they emboldened me further to share more points. And I think with Palaxy, Guardians of the Palaxy, I really feel safe with Whitney and MT, especially, like, I mean, MT is so brilliant. And yeah. he's also
the master.
He's so empathetic and he's so welcoming. It's like he will sit there and listen to me say something so off. Such a theory of, like, I remember one time for Rogue Theory, they were like, just please do a bad theory so we can, like, not like, you know, like, they're like, we have two good theories. Do one that's like off the wall so we can have like a fun.
Crazy.
And I was like, Batman is going to be in Multiverse of Madness.
I think I remember that actually.
People hated me so much. And I was like, I made this up because I was like wrestling. They were like, be the heel. And poor MT had to straight face give a thoughtful response to that. And he did. And, like, I mean, I already loved MT anyway, but from that moment on, I was like, that guy's a true ride or die. Like, he'll sit there and give you like a little, like, I mean, he had to point out that it was bonkers for his own, you know, credibility.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I'm sure
I just
cooked with it too, honestly. I'm sure whatever he came up with was fucking good.
Yes. it's the best. He's, you know, he's the GOAT. But, I think, you know, it's still an evolving journey. I'm headed to New York for a few months, at least for a project that I'm, you know, actually a couple of things I'm excited to do that aren't really in the comic book space. I'm actually helping make some, like, some industrials films for a couple of businesses, but it's like, it's going to allow me the freedom to do Palaxy and have a drink with me. And then, and with that, I want to, you know, experiment with some more live streams and, like, say the forbidden word for my nerd friend sports. And
hey, we like sports over here too, baby. I know you're a Bills fan, I'm a Bears fan, so I think we can connect a lot on our fandom in sports.
we sure can. So yeah, you know, I think I never would have imagined, especially being here so many years as an actor and a comedian and a writer, I never would have thought, oh, I'll be a YouTuber. And then it happened. And now I'm continuing to try to be a better YouTuber and a better host and a better presenter and a better personality. Or you just get better at the whole thing, because I think it helps with everything. I've gotten acting opportunities now because of New Rockstars, right? Like, people know me from New Rockstars, and they trust me to try things for them, you know, whether it's acting in a sketch or acting in a film or a short film, and I've gotten writing opportunities. So, I mean, the whole thing, I think it's that perfect intersection of luck and preparedness that I had in that moment. And I appreciate, I had a patient, kind of a patient master in Philip that was like, he will be my Mr. Miyagi in the YouTube space. But, you know, it required him to be very honest with me, and it required me to be able to take notes and listen and not be too proud and say he doesn't know what he's talking about. So long answer, but basically I can give credit to my friends. They've made me a YouTuber, and whether for better or for worse, credit and blame to my friends.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just so awesome to hear. And I really love that story. And I mean, please go on as long as you want, because, like I said, I love hearing about it. And I just think that's something, at least for me, I personally very much relate to. I mean, before doing this podcast and all this stuff, I was like, what do you mean I'm going to talk to people on the internet? Like, that was like terrifying to me. And I totally understand the feeling of imposter syndrome, even being a comic book nerd. It's like, do I know as much as I really think I do? You know, all that kind of stuff. So I think having someone like Philip, shout out to Philip, you know, to be there for you and kind of, you know, bring you through to that, I think that's so awesome. And like you said, something very important to put out there. And I think something that everyone can relate to, whether you're like us talking nerd stuff on the internet or even just like in your office job or whatever, I think we can all relate to that kind of feeling. But I want to, I could talk to you all day about new rock stars and Guardians of the Galaxy. I love what you guys are doing over at the Galaxy. I got to, I know we just talked about it, but I just got to give another special shout out to MT and Whitney. I mean, you guys have just been so awesome. I love the new show. I've been a fan of you guys for a long time. So when all you guys got together and started this show, I was super excited. And again, just like setting up this interview.
You have been incredibly patient for the people listening. just know I've bailed and postponed this like three times. So
we are all just having you, having the Riz here at all is worth all the rescheduling.
Well, I so appreciate it. Also, I don't want to act like I'm winding up here. I'm happy to keep talking. I just wanted to say, yes, I need all the shout outs to MT and Whitney, and also Brett, Whitney's husband, who is our producer and our amazing editor, Alexa, because right now it is a 5-person labor of love. Mm-hmm. It's a 5-person ship that we are trying to, you know, we have people who are wonderful, you know, advocates for the show. And I can't thank you enough for always amplifying. And you know, it really means a lot to me. But it's like, and with that, it's why we, you know, it's not New Rock Stars, right? It's not, that's not the design of that. Like, yeah. New Rock Stars is a different, good, wonderful nerd bastion to go to. And there's, you know, those guys are my friends. And whether or not I am working for them in the full-time capacity or popping in, that's always going to be the case. But with Galaxy, it really is just three people who love each other and want to talk about this stuff. And I think that that is a healthy contribution to the nerd space. And so I appreciate everyone listening, and I beg you to stay with us, because we may not have the robust fields of content right now with the strike and everything, but like, we're going to keep talking about stuff. And there's, you know, we got What If, we got more animation stuff coming out. We're going to keep
talking. Oh, the Galaxy train is going, my friend. It's going hot.
We're going. And it means a lot. Everyone who's listening and sharing and even our unbelievably a few people that have reached out to sponsor, it just means the world. And hopefully with Patreon and stuff, we're going to get some better, more robust experiences for you. But, yeah, I just really appreciate it. I'm sorry, this is just a tangent. What was the movie where we first met? What movie were we at in Burbank?
Guardians.
It was Guardians 3. Yeah. I was like, that's the first time we met in person, right?
I was lucky enough to meet you, and I got to tell you, this has been
a long time coming.
Yeah, I was going to say that was a long time, actually. Yeah. Now that I'm thinking back on it, that was a while ago. Yeah. But I mean, again, I just can't thank you guys enough for being so welcoming and you know, so kind and cool. Yes. You know, being someone who's looked up to you guys, like being able to meet you guys, and I mean, having you, just talking with you today has been super awesome. But I know we're kind of on a time schedule here, so I want to make this last kind of bit quick. But I'm going to kind of mash this up into one question for the sake of time. On the last Galaxy episode, you guys were talking about, you know, your favorites from Phase 4. And like we were just talking about, you're a big Star Wars guy. I'm a big Star Wars guy, too. And I think that there's a conversation to be had with both Marvel and Star Wars going on right now with, you know, people saying, oh, is the MCU dead? And you have like all these actors and directors kind of, you know, shit talking and, you know, some aspects. And I think we mainly see that with Marvel right now, but I think it also we see it with Star Wars as well. And kind of like, oh, where are things going? And I'm just curious, being an actor and being someone who, you know, more or less has kind of seen how the sausage is made, if you will, I'm curious what your opinion on this kind of discourse is as it regards to, like I said, Marvel and Star Wars. Do you think, I mean, I know, again, this is just your personal opinion, not like any insider knowledge or anything like that, but just again, from your experience with Hollywood, how these things work, do you think there is a real problem, or do you think it's more so clicks, you know, trendy headlines get clicks, which gets paid, you know, it's more so in that vein? Or do you think, like I said, in your opinion, there is some real problems to be had?
I think that's a very important question to ask. I have so many thoughts. So let me try to say them all kind of in bullet point order. There's a thing about entertainment industry and TV and movies and music that the people who work in it are like their own. It's a circular firing squad. You know, it's like everybody shooting each other. It's like they're like there's a circular firing squad. I can't tell you when, you know, when I moved out here, like right as Twitter started, 2007. So like literally the birth of Twitter and the birth of me in LA was the same, was two giant, yeah. two twin ogres being unleashed upon a city. But but I don't get, I get criticism. Criticism is valid. Yeah. Constructive criticism is uber valid. Mm. I don't understand punching down on things that you don't, aren't your cup of tea. I'm not a huge multi-cam sitcom fan. I'm not a giant. I mean, I love Cheers and Roseanne and shows like that as a kid. But like when I was older, I didn't sit down to watch Two and a Half Men or Big Bang Theory or any of the Chuck Lorre shows. I don't think I've ever once openly criticized a Chuck Lorre or any other multi-cam sitcom show, because if one of those shows thought that I was good enough to be on it, I would go there and I would do the best job I could to make whatever that show was asking me to do be funny, deliver a line, make a face. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think that is that to me is a worthwhile endeavor. It is not being artistically untrue to myself. I don't get why that same thing exists for superhero movies and sci-fi, where it's like you somehow have to like qualify that you know that this isn't like the real work. We're not doing the like, you know, Arthur Miller play or the whatever, you know. It's like, no, if you got to put on some fake elf ears and go be an elf in the woods, like that's fucking awesome. Yeah. Like there's no, like, I don't understand the fatigue. I think the fatigue is bullshit. I think, unfortunately, right now, culturally, complaints get clicks. Mm-hmm. You know, shitting on gets clicks. Declaring something dead or in crisis gets clicks. People that I know and respect on the internet have turned into these, like, massive clickbaiting, MCU's dead. And I think the difference is Marvel fans are younger, so it's a different mm-hmm. type of hate. Star Wars fans are older, so their hatred comes in more flowery language and like almost parental disappointment. Like, this is not the Star Wars that I thought expected.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's like dudes in their 50s and women in their 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. 70s that are like complaining about droids and Wookiees. Like, what are we doing? And then, yeah,
what are we doing here?
And then it's like just the idea that not every single piece of media is designed for every single person. Like, what kind of 100%. World? The same people that are complaining that like we're becoming a genderless, sexless society are the same people that want completely targeted media projects that are specific to their interest. Like, it's like they want, like, they can't have both things. Like, they can't, yeah. like, people, like, I'm getting off track, but it just,
go, dude, go. Yes, please.
It bothers me so much because I'm like, you can't censor other people because you think things are being too woke or censored, right? Like, it's mm-hmm, like
100%.
That's like the defense thing. It's like, I don't care if two characters in Star Wars are gay. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't affect my life at all. In fact, I like it. I think it's good. Yeah. I think. Listen, if we're doing a space western opera, soap opera. Like, yeah, do I think that every character out in outer space in a galaxy far, far away is heterosexual and super hot and like yeah. real hot alien boys kissing real hot alien girls? Sure, fine. That's great for me. But I don't mind if a super hot alien boy kisses an ugly alien boy or an equally attractive. It's all just so dumb. It's not real.
We're talking about aliens here. Like, what are we, like you said, like, what are we even fucking talking about? And I just, I love that take. I could echo you all day on that. And especially, you know, us, both of us being two white dudes. It's like,
yeah,
we have And it's like, I'm so sick of it. And this is kind of a point that you brought up on the palette.
Right. Sheet. If we're sick of it, how do you think our friends who are not white guys?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's like, we've had, what are we on, 30 something MCU movies?
Yeah.
And 28 of them are white dudes. So it's like,
I'm so sorry you had good. I'm so sorry that you had to watch three superpowered women fight another superpowered woman in space for an hour and a half of your life, and that it didn't match up with your hopes and dreams. But I for all of you that the Marvels let down, I pray for you, and I want you to know you're in my thoughts and prayers. But I think dialing it back into Marvel and Star Wars specifically, criticize all you want. It's okay. I didn't like Secret Invasion. I didn't like Secret Invasion. And after, going to the junket, I had real concerns that the creative forces behind Secret Invasion did not know what the Secret Invasion comic was and did not know what Marvel, didn't really care.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of coverage of Secret Invasion because that was my job. I looked for things that I liked. I talked about the things that I liked. I talked about the things that I didn't like. But you know what I haven't thought about in about 2.5-3 months? Secret Invasion. I've moved on.
Exactly.
I moved on with my life. I'm happy. I hope everyone that made the show is proud that they got something that made it to TV. Do you know how much the percentage of shows that are shot, sold, filmed, and never come out? The pilot episode gets done.
It'd be shocking, I'm sure.
It's like 90%. It's a huge amount. So bless them. They got it done. And you know what? If what you need to get through your day is to go on Twitter and say Disney is gasping for air after the massive failure of the Marvels, so that you can get 15 likes from 10 bots and 5 incels, go ahead. You're not hurting me. Mm-hmm. I need to learn to control myself and not go on Twitter. And look, I don't think it's healthy. I have caught myself in negative spirals before, so I empathize. And, you know, for these Star Wars people, Star Wars has outgrown them. Star Wars has outlived their childlike imaginations. Yeah. Star Wars is 50 years old now, you know, or going on 50. The people who created Star Wars in the 70s are not children, do not have a childlike imagination or sense of wonder anymore. The fans that watched in the 70s may be losing that as well. Don't let that ruin it for a future generation of kids and young people that want to, you know, go on that adventure, watch A New Hope, and then read the literal thousands of comics and novels, or
so
play
much.
The video games, or watch the animated series, or watch now the Disney Plus shows. Don't ruin it for those people.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just enjoy the fact that you got a delicious Star Wars meal for a large chunk of your life, and not let other people eat the delicious Star Wars meal.
Yeah, and you got leftovers. Go rewatch Empire.
Go back.
Still exists. Like, it's watch not like Luke, they're erased.
Watch Luke kiss his sister and then think to yourself, this is how I like it.
Hell yeah, brother.
Yeah. I like when he kisses his sister. I'm mad she ended up with Han Solo.
I can't echo that sentiment enough. That's something, you know, we talk about a lot here on our podcast, especially as it pertains to Marvel.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I think that's such a refreshing take to have. And like you said, especially for, you know, we do very similar things on the internet here, and I see it as well. Hate, like I said, unfortunately, hate gets paid these days. And it's so irritating like it. Frustrating, especially for people like us that, you know, do try to genuinely just share a love and a passion. And like you said, I 100%, I'll even put it in my terms of stuff, Thor Love and Thunder. Like, I'm obviously, I know that's not a great movie. Like, I'm not an idiot, but there's stuff in there that I enjoy. And there's stuff
absolutely.
In there that I think like anyone can enjoy. That doesn't mean you have to say that it's like winning Oscars and shit, but it's like, why am I going to spend time being like Taika Waititi is the worst and like funny Thor bad? Like, bro, who cares? Move on. Watch something else.
Yeah, exactly. There's no shortage of things that could be making you happy. So it does feel, although I regulating emotions for anybody is difficult. We have good, and everyone has a good day and a bad day. So I'd never say like, choose happiness, because I think that's kind of
be
bullshit.
Happy.
I just think if something isn't working for you anymore, if you find yourself in at a point in your life where these oh my god, my computer's trying to make me do something. I'm telling it no. where Marvel or whatever isn't working for you anymore, take a step away. You don't have to spend. I mean, if you're just a fan, if you're a fan of the stuff and it's bothering you, take a breath, take a step away, go try something else. And maybe with fresh eyes and, like, you know, a little bit of time passing, you'll grow to appreciate it again. Or maybe it's, maybe it has evolved beyond something that you're interested in, but that is no reason to be miserable. There's going to be, there are better days ahead for you. For most, I hope, you know, I think it's something I work so hard on because I can, I have this, like, weird, you know, we all have a cynical voice in our head that is telling us we're not good enough or we're not smart enough or we're not worthy of lifting Mjolnir. But it's like, we're, when you work around that, you find the things that you like and you find the things that you're good at. It's just so much, life is so much more fulfilling, and it really, even I think I care too much that people are negative because I'm like, no, I want you to be positive. It's like,
no, that's not my literally
job. Yeah. My job is not to make people positive. My job is to try to be positive without being inauthentic and without being disingenuous. Cause I don't want to sit here and, like, you know, listen, I get called a shill 50 times a week and I don't care. I've got a suit of armor. It doesn't bother me. And a lot of that is jealousy based, but, you know, I don't want to be a liar, but I do want to look for, I want to look for the silver linings of things. I don't want to, I don't want to dig down deeper into why something is quote unquote broken. So,
yeah, I'd rather, like you said, I'd rather look at the positives of it. And like you said, we can acknowledge the bad without being like, this is just shit or, you know, whatever, blah, 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 blah. But again, I could not echo all those sentiments more. I feel 100% the same way. And I mean, I wish we could talk about this stuff all day long.
Well,
because I could, like you said,
have me back on.
Hey, the door's open, my friend. The door's always open.
I'm going to be freezing my ass off in New York throughout an entire brutal winter. So,
hey, bundle up and get that computer booted up and we'll let it rock, man.
I'm gonna be an indoor kid. Let's check back in after the holidays. I'd love to come back on.
Please, I would love that. And before we get out of here, I want to shoot it off to you, my friend, really quickly. I know we've talked about all the stuff you got going on throughout this interview, but I want to give you a quick second to plug yourself, tell the people where they can find you. I will be putting all the links to all Tommy's shows and all the related things in the description, so go down there and click that. But Tommy, take it away, my friend.
Absolutely. So, Guardians of the Galaxy, a weekly podcast from the minds of MT, Whitney, and Tommy B, with our producer Brett and our awesome editor Alexa. That's a weekly podcast episode. They're usually out Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on how hungover Whitney and I are on Saturday. sorry, Whitney, I threw you under the bus with me. Have a Drink With Me is what I will simply say, a work in progress with me and my brilliant friend Dylan Polniak. It's Dylan's baby that I have now joined him in a union to raise. We are raising Have a Drink With Me as co-parents. The goal is to be out every Thursday. With this move, and I got a horrible virus in November, we are just now getting back on track thanks to the saint-like patience of Dylan, who has chosen not to end his friendship and collaborative relationship with me. But we are back. We are having drinks.
Back, baby.
We would love to have the Sons of Mjolnir on at some point to have a drink with us.
Please.
By the way, if anyone out there doesn't drink alcohol, it's just the concept of having a drink. Get a lemonade. No problem. Yeah. There's going to be some weeks where I'm going to need to be drinking Diet Cokes.
Get an Arnold Palmy.
That's right. Yeah. Who doesn't love an Arnold Palmer? So, yeah, Have a Drink With Me, Guardians of the Galaxy. You can find me on all platforms at Tommy B. Reach out. I think my DMs are always open, so I may not get to them because I get distracted. But, you know, if you got a nerd question, ask me. I don't mind. I spent a lot of time on airplanes and on long drives, so the only thing I could do is read people's excellent theories on things. So please, by all means, reach out. Reach out to your boy.
Reach out to your boy. Big Head Gang is in the building, Tommy. I cannot thank you enough, my friend, for being here and doing this. This was so much fun. If you guys enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a like. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure, do it right now before you even end this episode. Go subscribe to Guardians of the Galaxy. Go subscribe to Have a Drink With Me. both amazing shows. You can take my word for it. You will have an amazing time on both of them. Again, thank you so much for coming on with me. For all you guys out here, for all you guys out there, I think that might be all we have for you. I hope that you all stay hydrated. I hope your stacks are fat this week, and we will see you guys all next time.
I love it.
I'm like this all day.